Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Stoke at home building a snowman. Didn't want to hack it. Didn't want to hack the drive. I get it. It's from the bayou. He's not built for it. Time to bring up an inconvenient truth, Troy. With Bradley Roby and Matt Paradis now gone. Now think about this. Make sure you're sitting down for this. With Bradley Roby and Matt Paradis now gone, there are no players left from the class of 2013 or 2014.
That hurts. That stings. But we've known this for years. I mean, that's why last year's draft class was so welcome, because there had been just some too many swings and misses, especially in that, you know, that second, third, fourth round area. I mean, once you get past the fifth, those are depth guys. But when you miss one through four, those hurt, because those guys are supposed to be NFL starters. In a lot of cases, starters on, you know, day one.
Sure. Ideally. And I'll say this, should the Broncos opt to move on from Max Garcia, Jeff Heuerman, and Shane Ray, which a lot of folks are suspecting will end up happening, there won't be anyone left from the class of 2015. Six of the eight picks from the 2016 class are still on the roster, with Paxton and Riley Dixon gone. Four of the eight from 2017 remain on the team. Four of the eight from 2017. So half the class of 2017 is a goner. Bowles is the only regular contributor. Langley switching positions. DeMarcus Walker doesn't see the field. And Jake Butt is just not available. It is powerful. When you look up, when you pull up, you can go to it on Pro Football Reference, which is like one of my favorite informational sites, and just type in Broncos draft history. Like your class of 2015, it's 2019. Those guys should be entering their prime. Your class of 2014, those guys should be on their second contracts in their prime. And you're looking at entire classes, just vacant holes. This is how you get to a 5-win team. This is how you get to a 6-win team. You miss not only on first-round picks, second-round picks, you miss on entire classes. Wildly disturbing. And we saw it coming. Like, we saw it coming with Bradley Roby. You know, a lot of us saw it coming with Matt Paradis. Just knew it probably wasn't going to be as realistic as the Broncos stepping up and giving him the highest paid, you know, center contract in football, or flirting with it. But now that it's actually here, it's disturbing. It's disturbing, Troy. And you bring up the class of 2018. We're hoping that it's in stark contrast, because Bradley Chubb, I mean, it kind of goes without saying. Cortland Sutton looks like it has a great trajectory. Royce Freeman even walked in the league and, you know, put up five rushing touchdowns as a rookie, was certainly serviceable. Isaac Yiadom has showed flashes, you know, as much as you would hope for a third-round cornerback. Josie Jewell, he was on the field. Deshaun Hamilton, he was on the field. Troy Fumagalli, question mark. Sam Jones, question mark. Kayshon Barea, not really any sort of factor. David Williams, he's already gone. But it is noteworthy that the class of 18 just looks so much different from any other class. Like, it doesn't look like the same franchise doing the drafting. For good reasons. I mean, we're excited about the class of 18. But you got to do it again. What is your faith that they can pull it off again?
Well, I asked John Elway about the philosophical shift in the draft. I asked him at the combine a couple weeks ago about the idea, would you continue in that regard, in that lane of drafting guys who were captains, drafting guys who were experienced veterans in college, basically kind of get away from the showcase player.
Sure.
And he said that it worked. You know, he wasn't committing that that's the way they're going to go forever, but it certainly worked, and they're aware of how it worked. And in talking to players, current and former Broncos players, they absolutely believe they should stay on that track because of the entitlement and just complete lack of contribution from a couple of those classes, with, you know, whether you say it's Langley, whether you say it's Carlos Henderson, whether you say it's Paxton Lynch. I mean, every guy that I talk to in the locker room will tell you that they have to get away from that idea of, oh, it's just a talented guy. When we know there's red flags, but we get here, we're going to figure them out. I don't think they're going to go back to that. I think they're going to stay, based on what I'm being told, that lean, at least tilt toward experienced guy, captains, high football IQ, coachable guys, guys you can get on the field sooner that can take complicated concepts. Because Vic Fangio's defense isn't easy. He's an evil genius. Genius implies what it's saying, that, you know, Vic, he asks a lot of his defenders. And part of the reason they're good is you get guys that are smart and they can play within his framework. That's why are the Patriots so good? At one point, they had more drafted captains than anybody in the NFL. I don't know if that stat still holds, but that wasn't by accident.
I remember that, yep.
They draft smart players because to play for Bill Belichick, for the most part, you got to be able to understand and be coachable. He's not going to, they don't have patience for fools there. They don't suffer fools there. They don't suffer guys who feel like they're entitled. At some point, they'll figure it out. So, what is my confidence level they can pull off another good draft class? I don't know if it'll be as good as this past one, but if they stay in line with draft guys who played a lot, who were smart, who were captains, high football IQ, I give them a better chance of succeeding.
Hell yeah.
Than showcase guy, he's not, you know, some of the stuff doesn't always show up on the field, but we think we'll coach it. Or he's always good on the field, but he knew two plays, and he was constantly in trouble and constantly late in college. How is money going to make that better?
Never does.
Money always amplifies your flaws in terms of what I've seen in professional athletes.
Sure.
If you already have the tendency to be late and be a problem child, money typically makes that behavior worse. And if you're a good dude, typically getting paid doesn't change you as much. It changes you in some regard, but it doesn't change you as much. So I would suggest the Broncos, I would humbly suggest, stay on the track of guys who you know you can trust. Now, you can't have a whole bunch of Boy Scouts. I get it. But come on. Draft guys who are smart, who understand it, who are coachable. And that class, I also throw Philip Lindsay in, even though they probably should have lost him. And they should have drafted him. Fact is, he's part of that rookie group. And another guy who basically exhibits all the traits you want, who will die for his teammates, who's coachable, who's the pride of – that's what was amazing when I talked to Philip, just the pride of being on the team and us rookies,
sure.
And we're going to change this.
Yeah.
Like there was this collegiate feel of us, you know, with he and Chubb and Sutton, and this isn't going to happen under our watch. The other class, like the Paxton Lynch class,
oh my gosh.
If you could have torn him away from Fortnite for a second to ask him about it, you wouldn't have gotten that answer.
No, the tone of this class, stark contrast between the previous classes, particularly the previous two, and I'm getting this on the RamosLaw.com text line in regard to the draft classes. While that's true and it sounds bad in isolation, it's not that unusual across the NFL. I love how you harp on this without comparing it with the NFL as a whole. That's lame. Guys, that's not true. Saying that this is normal is not true. And if you want me to compare it with the rest of the NFL, try this one on for size. Every single NFL team has drafted an offensive Pro Bowler since the last time the Broncos did. Let me say it one more time. Every single team in professional football has drafted an offensive Pro Bowler since the last time the Broncos did. It was only up until this year, it was only the Colts and the Broncos who hadn't drafted an offensive Pro Bowler since, I think, 2012, and they had their guy this year with Quentin Nelson. It's only the Broncos left. So there's your comparison to the rest of the NFL. Not being unfair. This is unusual. Okay, Troy.
Well, he did get Philip Lindsay in as a Pro Bowl, but he's not drafted.
He chose the Broncos. I'm never giving Broncos credit for that. Never. He chose the Broncos, and he should have bounced on them. He made that decision with his head and not his heart, thankfully, because he was pissed. He had a right to be. They lied to him, said they were going to draft him. He's sitting there, and they drafted David Williams instead. The Broncos never get credit for that, at least from me. Now, we can be thankful and appreciative that he's here, and we should be. But that being said, this is...
His mom gets credit for that. She calmed him down and basically said, financially and everything, the support system... You know you're mad, but it'd still be better in the vacuum of one season to be here at home.
Yep, and she was right.
Thank God
we've got the little guy.
Thank God we've got the little guy. Thank you, Coach. Should the Broncos be considering a reunion with one former member of the no-fly zone? Details next. Should the Broncos be considering a reunion with one particular member, the no-fly zone? Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Troy, I'm talking about TJ Ward. Did you see the videos of TJ working out?
I did. And I still text him every once in a while. TJ's a good dude. I really enjoyed covering him. Brings an intensity and an edge to a locker room, but it did not end well here. I cannot see it happening here.
Personality-wise, didn't end well?
Yeah, it's just that last training camp with him, they felt like he was that he should have been on the field. He had a hamstring issue. He was trying to stay off the field, stay healthy, try to get a new contract. They felt like he should have been on the field. And then they did the worst thing you can happen to a veteran, which is release you right at the end of training camp.
Right.
You know, so that whole thing, you know, it's business. Listen, I'm not telling you that it's unicorns and rainbows in professional sports. Sometimes it looks like a guy's being done dirty and you don't know the backside of it, what had gone on. Sometimes the athlete does the team wrong, you know, and, you know, but in this case, it didn't end well. And so for the idea of him returning here would surprise me. The idea of him returning to the league, at least in a training camp, would not.
If they had more respect for TJ Ward, they probably wouldn't have done him the way that they did. Is that fair?
Yeah, the relationship had become strained by that point in terms of how they felt he was dealing with his situation. Because look what let's compare it apples to apples for the most part. What did they just do with Darian Stewart? Very similar situation. Darian's trended it down a little bit. I think he's been blamed unfairly in some cases. He's been kind of been the scapegoat when coverages go wrong. And going into the offseason, my feeling was he was going to come into camp and have to make the team and have a good camp. And he was in a very similar situation to TJ Ward. Problem was TJ didn't really know he was in that situation.
Right.
He thought he was on the team.
Well, neither did Vance.
Yeah. TJ thought he was on the team.
Sure.
But in the case of Darian, there was no question if had they stayed with him, there was a chance he would have gotten cut in training camp.
Yep.
So what did they do in this case, Zach?
They just got out in front of it and let him go and enter the market.
And there were better lines of communication. Number of reasons why you just said it. He basically demanded clarity, and they didn't have to give it to him. They could have said, hey, we're going to hold on to you. You're an asset. We don't know what we have. We don't know what we have in Parks. We don't know what we have in DeMonte Thomas. We don't know what's going to happen in free agency. We want to hold on to you. But instead, he basically demanded clarity when I talked to Darian, and he went to him after the combine and said, you're picking up options on everyone. Where do you stand with me? If you don't want me, let me go. And so they stepped back and said, okay, we'll let you go. Which, you know, he's like, how can you cut him? But that's the best thing that can happen to a guy is to get on the market in March, not August 31st, when everyone's setting their roster. That's the worst time to be available.
Right.
Because then you're not playing for someone on week one, so your salary's not guaranteed.
That's right.
But in Ward's case, what was different was he didn't go into that training camp thinking he had to make the team. And that's where I wish there were, whether it was the team communicating it or him being more realistic, having his agent press the issue and just saying, hey, crazy thought, I'm getting up here in age. Do I have to make the team? And I know they don't think that way, but had that happened, I think that whole summer would have played out differently for TJ. That how he approached training camp, how they reacted to him approaching training camp, and it wouldn't have led to this awkward exit of blowing up the it was literally like dropping a grenade in the locker room.
No kidding.
And they did underestimate how popular he was in the locker room. I will guarantee you that. They didn't underestimate that he was trending down. I get all that. I just felt like he deserved at least a half a season
sure.
to help bring Simmons along. And because TJ was a guy. I mean, he was a guy in that locker room, along with Tlaib. I mean, and Chris Harris, for me, is a leader, but he is an absolute just technician. But TJ and Tlaib brought the soundtrack of the defense. I mean, they were the DJ and one's on the mic.
Yeah.
And so when you take the football part out of it briefly, that's a lot. The way it resonated with guys in the locker room, their respect for those two guys was real.
And we heard it. I mean, long after they were gone, it was still a topic of conversation, like into microphones. Long after TJ Ward was gone into the NFL season, not that they were making excuses, but you could see it was caught people, caught players, clearly off guard. and they could never really gain their balance following that. It was there was never an acceptance of the way that it went down. It was always people were still kind of pissed off.
Well, yeah, and the team was like, hey, his play wasn't what we wanted. He was making too much money. Get over it. And the players are like, this guy's a leader. He's one of us. You know, he was a dog for us. Like, that's how the players talk in that, you know, in that vernacular.
Sure.
He left it on the field for them. And they, you know, and so there was just divergent views of this guy. One, the team seeing it strictly from an on-field standpoint of his skills are declining, he's making too much money. Where in the locker room, they're like, this is our leader of the secondary in some ways. I mean, the way it all, they all fit together. Don't get me wrong here, but don't confuse how much of a presence, especially on game day, that TJ and Tlaib had. Go back and listen to any time Mic'd Up or
yeah,
any of those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who do you hear most on those?
Both those two.
TJ and Tlaib. That's what I'm saying. Like, they were a voice in literally and figuratively of the defense.
And the one thing that I remember, one of a handful of things, you go back and listen to the Super Bowl 50 soundtrack, all the mic'd up, you know, retroactively going through the Super Bowl, and TJ Ward just in Cam Newton's face saying, you didn't see anything like this in the NFC. And that's always like one of my favorite bites from TJ Ward. Okay, Troy Rank filling for Brandon Stokely today. Are we seeing the revival of an elite unit that we loved for years here in Broncos country? Is it back? That's next. Be careful, be safe. The conditions are real. You put yourself at risk if you are going to hop out there in the car. And that's just a reality right now. It is a complete whiteout. Our studios, our American Financing studios, are here in the tech center. And you cannot see 50 yards in any direction. It's crazy. It's crazy. I know a lot of you at work today, a lot of you out there are drivers. Huge shout out to our drivers out there, whether you're delivering mail, packages, food, people, stay safe, and we appreciate you rocking with us on a day like today. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Could we see a revival of an elite unit that we loved for years here in Broncos country? What I'm talking about is not necessarily the quote-unquote no-fly zone, but I am talking about an elite secondary. With Kareem Jackson now in the mix, the Broncos have two of the top five cornerbacks from this past year, according to Pro Football Focus. Kareem Jackson was rated the fifth best cornerback. Chris Harris Jr. was rated the fourth best cornerback. Troy, could it be a semblance of what it once was?
I like the roots they're putting down here. I like some of the things that have changed in that regard. Starting with Chris Harris, that's always a nice play. The charter member, the last remaining. And then there was one. Last remaining member of the no-fly zone. He's an elite player in every way. Both in how he sees the game, how he plays the game. Kareem Jackson fits what Vic Fangio wanted. If they had just gotten Kareem Jackson and it was the same defense as last year, I wouldn't be as bullish on this. But Jackson fits clearly what Vic Fangio wants. Hybrid corner safety. We have five, you know, you're in nickel a lot. You're going to have three guys who can cover at all times, three corners. And in the case of Jackson, he's physical enough to maybe, you know, go with a tight end, deal with different matchups. But the way Fangio plays his defense, Jackson fits. He's a sound tackler, and he's physical. And he's not going to be playing press man 90% of the snaps like the Broncos stubbornly tried to do last year, even when injuries hit. So that's a great place to start with Chris Harris and Kareem Jackson. Honestly, I would have liked Pierre Desir. I'm not going to lie. He's younger. You know, he's coming off a really good year with the Colts. He just re-signed with the Colts.
Saw that.
But I trust Vic Fangio. He knows more. You know, he's probably forgotten more defense in 5 seconds than I'll ever know. And if he thinks Kareem Jackson is the fit, which when I watch Kareem Jackson, I can see why. But if he thinks that's the best guy, okay, trust him. That guy will fit as they form this secondary. And he rebuilt, in some ways, that Chicago defense wasn't like he inherited some great defense.
No, that's right.
They put pieces together and made guys work. Like, Amos wasn't considered a star. Callahan was. These guys weren't considered elite players necessarily. So if he thinks Jackson can help him on that, I like it. Where do they go at safety, though? You know, Justin Simmons, I like. He's got to improve. He was inconsistent last year.
He was. You know, my expectations to what level Justin Simmons actually plays played in 2018, it didn't match up. It didn't. I was expecting much more. I love Justin Simmons. I have been accused of having a crush on Justin Simmons. He just did. He was not up to snuff. Not saying he was bad, but our expectations, like a year ago, last offseason, we went through the roster and we said, who under the age of 26 are you excited about? And it was like Justin Simmons was a name that unanimously we were like, okay, yeah, this is a guy. And then he just sort of was just okay.
Yeah, he just kind of plateaued a little. I think he will benefit from Fangio and the way he will use him. Justin's a really cerebral player. I think he will be helped by the addition of Vic Fangio. Not that, you know, I'm not blaming Joe Woods for all this. That's not the case. I'm just saying sometimes a player fits a scheme better. And I think this scheme will fit Justin better. And then where do you go at the other safety spot? You know, Jackson can move around, so he's a hybrid, but is that Will Parks? Is that DeMonte Thomas? I know they really like Jamal Carter, who missed all of last year with a leg injury.
That's right.
That's part of the reason they weren't in on Amos, is they believe from that group of Parks, DeMonte Thomas, and Jamal Carter, that they've got something there. And Vic Fangio clearly must have agreed in his assessment of the roster to not pursue, you know, Amos. They weren't in on Amos. You know, he liked coaching him, obviously, but they were aggressively. I was told last night by a source their number one target coming out of the gate, a guy they absolutely had to have, was Kareem Jackson. Number one with a bullet. So based on what I'm being told by multiple sources on that, Fangio believes he's going to fit that defense well. And then they shifted to James, like, we got to get a right tackle. We really like him. And they admittedly had to pay a little more than they want.
Yeah.
Because you're shopping at the auction on day one. And the Shelby Mustang comes across the stage. You're paying more than you want.
Right.
But I like some of it. I'm more fascinated to see schematically how that can bring out the potential in some of these players. Because that's the case. Like, when we say coach them up, coaching can make players better. And last year at times I felt like it exposed players.
Mm.
Let's play man.
Mm.
We're in our seventh corner.
Right.
Let's play man.
We're not going to change anything.
We're not changing anything.
Yeah.
Is this high school? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, that was.
I mean, you watched the Patriots completely change their coverage for a Super Bowl.
That's right.
The Broncos can't change when they're down to like their seventh string defensive back. I just think, you know, the ego is a powerful thing. The male ego, especially. Come on. You can't stay in press man when you're down to your fourth and fifth string corners. It's not fair to Isaac Yiadom. Yiadom, too, plays a lot like Kareem Jackson. I think he will benefit from this Fangio defense because he got exposed in press man last year. But I think his development will trend upward now in this defense because he's got some of the similar traits as he's a much younger version, but I see a little bit of him in Kareem Jackson. So to answer that long-winded question, I'm intrigued by the secondary based on how Vic Fangio will use that secondary.
Cecil Lammy has made it home just now.
And he lives 2 minutes from here.
He left an hour and 40 minutes ago. He said he did a 360 on the exit ramp for Titan Road. Guys, it's no joke.
He's okay, though?
He is okay. He made it home. You went off the road earlier today?
I did, on I-25 up north by Brighton, by the E-470 exit. A car cut me off, and I tapped the brakes. I didn't hit them, and then I started to spin out, turned into it, so I ended up over on the grass on the other side. But I went over three lanes was the problem. Thank God nobody was there. But I literally, when I started to slide, I went three lanes across to end up in the grass. That's such a helpless feeling because you can't do anything.
It
and
is.
Don't jerk the wheel. You got to you steer into it to allow yourself to kind of come out of it. Because if you jerk the wheel, that's when you roll. That's when bad things happen. When you start braking, and here we are talking motor shower. But you start braking and you rip the wheel into it that way. Boy, that's when you can go and turn and it gets really nasty. We got an email Just now, one of our photographers, a guy that I've worked with at Channel 7, he's okay, but he was in an accident where his car may have been totaled. Just be safe. I mean, we're looking out the studio right now, and it's whiteout conditions. And I grew up here. I've lived, 45-plus years in Colorado. And this is one of those days. I mean, you can count on your hand days like this. This is the no-joke day. Like, this is not overstated. It's not hyperbole. If you do not have to be out on the road, do not go out on the road. I mean, if you can get through the night and you have supplies, you have water, you have food, try to get through, because it is dangerous out there right now. It's not that it's just, hey, it's inconvenient. We're looking out the window, Zach, and you can barely see trees that are like 20 feet from us.
It's no joke. Be careful. Act accordingly. Be cautious. Go slow. Stay inside if you can. What do Juwan James and Le'Veon Bell have in common? What do Juwan James and Le'Veon Bell have in common? On the surface, not much of anything. But you take a look into their direct deposit that's going to hit every other week here this fall. More similar than you would guess. The contract the Broncos signed Juwan James to is nearly identical to what the New York Jets signed Le'Veon Bell to. Both players, Juwan James and Le'Veon Bell, signed four-year, $52 million deals. Le'Veon only got $3 million more in guarantees. And Bell, with incentives, can surpass that $52 million mark. But I got to tell you, Troy, and Troy Wright filling in for Brandon Stokely today, didn't see this coming on both fronts. I thought Le'Veon Bell was going to get more money than he got, and I didn't think the Broncos were going to make Juwan James the highest paid tackle, right tackle, in all of football. And then you see the dust settle a little bit. Both players, 4 years, $52 million.
Bell's getting crushed today because he walked away from essentially $14.5 million last year that he was never going to get back. So then you have to subtract his guarantee from that. That he gets, 32 guaranteed, right? Up to 35?
Yep.
So essentially, he held out for a year to get $20 million guaranteed that he probably could have got if he played last year. The argument for him would be it had become untenable with the Steelers, and he is used at such a high volume, one of the most high-volume used players in the history of the NFL.
That's right.
I mean, maybe he's well-served to not play a year. I do wonder how much he loves football at times, because he's got a lot of interest outside of football.
He's dropped an album last night.
His weight fluctuates. You know, how much does he love it? And is he going to be happy in New York? He takes a deal. The Pittsburgh was only guaranteeing like 1 year, but the money wasn't dramatically different than what was on the table at different times for him. He set out, and after all that, you end up with the Jets. How's he going to deal with that when they're 2-4 and Sam Darnold's throwing picks every week? You know, I mean, I'm just curious. I'm not saying it won't work out. And I admire a guy who on principle says, this is what I want to do. I want to sit out. I just believe in my, and he's convicted. But he did not get the deal that he expected. As he's learning, nobody's handing out those Adrian Peterson contracts anymore.
No, they're not.
The idea that he got less than Todd Gurley is surprising to me. He's more valuable because he's one of the best receivers. He's the modern-day Marshall Faulk when it comes to a multi-threat out of the backfield. I think he could be an all-pro slot I don't know if slot. He could be a Pro Bowl receiver if he were just a receiver.
Right.
He's too big for a slot guy. But that's why I thought he might ultimately get paid. But the issue he's run into is there's issues off the field. He's been suspended. He's had issues, drug use issues that are very public. There's worry about locker room. And, man, I'll tell you one thing I've learned from the NFL. Many, not all, GMs, they hate distractions. And they hate the guys they can't rely on and that become unpredictable. You have to be a superstar for them to deal with that on a regular basis.
And unfortunately, the Steelers and life in Pittsburgh for Kevin Colbert, the GM there? Is it Colbert or Colbert? I don't know. But they've had nothing but distractions. while having one of the most talented teams in all of football. Having a Hall of Fame quarterback, having a Hall of Fame running back slash receiver, and you can't, like you said, you can't box Le'Veon into one thing, and having one of the most dynamic receivers we've ever seen in Antonio Brown, they're going to look a lot different. They're going to look a lot different this coming year. I'm curious to see how Le'Veon Bell will play after taking a whole year off. I mean, we've seen guys do it. Ricky Williams comes to mind. Ricky Williams took a year off and came back and was like a 1,000-yard rusher again. We've seen Adrian Peterson, you know, bounce maybe that more injury-related. Actually, he did take that year off. He was served that year off for the suspension. Who, by the way, Adrian Peterson signed another contract today. Adrian Peterson signed a 2-year deal, or is going to sign a 2-year deal when free agency opens in 8 minutes from now. More money and more years for AP. It just the dude is like, it's unbelievable. He's signing a 2-year, $8 million deal, it looks like, with the Redskins.
When we had him on a conference call when he was still with the Vikings, we had to tell him we had to go. That's how much fun he was to talk to this day. He talked for like 20 minutes. It was the most fascinating conference call I've ever been a part of. The players, usually a star player, is made available during the week from the opposing team.
Right.
And at one point, he was asked, do you think you could have come straight from high school to the NFL? He's like, absolutely. No problem. I mean, it was by the time that conference call ended, I was pretty sure he was convinced he could have gone from eighth grade Pop Warner to the NFL. But he looked the same at Oklahoma, if you go back and look, that he does now. He's one of those few guys who's ageless. Like, at 18, he has the same body that he does at 33 or whatever he is now. And I'll never forget, last year in the preseason, he signed on like a Monday with Washington. He was the best player on the field that day, Washington-Denver.
I know.
I mean, obviously there was some motivation there. Maybe he's playing at full throttle and some guys aren't. But I was like, who needs training camp? Guy has like two practices and he was the best player on an NFL field.
Unbelievable. And by the way, like, lest we forget, he is 33 years old. He's turning 34 in about a week. Okay? A week from now, he'll be 34 years old. He just ran for 1,000 yards. Like, Adrian Peterson, this past year, 2018, Washington Redskins, ran for 1,000 yards. That is crazy. With 7 touchdowns, over 4 yards a carry. That is crazy. At 33. After, you know, in 2016, he played 3 games. 2017, he played 4 games. Or no, he played 10 total because he was with the Saints a little bit and then there with the Cardinals. And then he plays all 16 and runs for 1,000 yards. Incredible. First ballot Hall of Famer. No discussion needed. This dude is the best that I've ever seen in this era. I think he's number one for those years in Minnesota from like 2007. Like, we got to remember, AP walked in the league as a rookie and ran for over 1,300 yards and didn't slow down. I mean, he was 1,500 yards in 2015. That was almost, you know, nearly, you know, the better part of a decade after his rookie season, and he's running for 1,500 yards. And then 5 years after that, 2018, he's running for 1,000. This dude is unbelievable. Crazy.
Well, we're burying the Steelers, though. And I mean, they're not better when Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell walk out the door. I'm sorry. And Roethlisberger deserves some issue and blame for this because of the culture he created of airing guys out. All quarterbacks yell at guys, stars, but they don't go on the radio show.
Yeah, they don't do it on the radio.
They don't do it 48 hours later when you've calmed down and then air him out again. That's the issue. I was like, well, you should be able to criticize him. I agree. You do it on the field. Peyton Manning screamed at guys all the time. He wasn't going on a radio show on a Tuesday wearing guys out. That's when you've calmed down and assessed the situation. In the heat of the moment,
right.
Athletes understand it. Why'd you make, you screwed up your assignment. What were you doing? You're like, that happens. 2 days later, you had a chance. You don't air your guys out. Those are your guys. But am I the only one that's not ready to crown the Browns as the AFC Super Bowl favorite? They're still the Browns. I like OBJ.
You say they're still the Browns. What does that mean?
They have to win a playoff game first. Like,
sure,
you think
sure.
They're going to go from not going to the playoffs in like 75 years. The last time they went to the playoffs, their quarterback was Bernie Kosar. They're going to go from that to the Super Bowl? I don't believe that.
Well, I'm not saying they're going to the Super Bowl.
That's what I heard today driving in. I'm like,
They I think they are very much in the conversation to compete for the AFC title.
But
I do believe that.
Let's see how they deal with expectations. Let's see how they deal with expectations.
Yet
when was
seen.
The last time Cleveland Browns had expectations?
Long time ago. Long time ago. But
the drive
also,
two?
But also, Troy, I'm not using, like, the NFL is a unique place where if you get into the party, you can win it all. It's not like the NBA where it's this process of trying to get over the hump that the Nuggets are surely going to face here in a couple months. With the NBA playoffs, they're not going to go win the championship. It just doesn't happen in basketball. In football, it can. And I think you're underselling the Browns a little bit here, Troy. I think they have the best offensive core in all football. Best offensive core. Quarterback Baker Mayfield. Receiver Antonio Callaway. Jarvis Landry. Odell Beckham Jr. Tight end David Njoku. Running backs Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. That is scary with a defense that already balls out. What about the Browns other than their history and mystery of how they'll play with? Is there anything tangible football that you point to and say, I don't believe in the Browns because of this?
Well, I'm not sold on their coach.
That's a good one.
I'm not sold on Kitchens. I mean, he's just a guy. Nobody was out there trying to hire him.
He's never done the job before.
Now he's going to do it with personalities, Jarvis Landry and OBJ.
And well, Baker.
How's OBJ going to be when he gets six targets because he's getting bracketed every play and Jarvis Landry's getting 10 for 130? Think he's going to love that? No. And Njoku drops a lot of passes. The for me, what will put them over the hump is Kareem Hunt. If he's only suspended, if it's six games, and then he comes back, then I absolutely believe they have a chance to win their division. And then we'll see. But there's strong personalities on that team now with Baker, Landry, and OBJ with a coach who's, I don't even know if he's ever been a head coach at any level.
I don't believe
he certainly hasn't been at the professional level, and he was never a big-time college coach. He's a coordinator.
His relationship with Baker Mayfield is what got him that job.
Right. But what happens, again, when OBJ's not getting the ball and he feels like Baker and Freddie are teaming up on him?
You know what?
I mean, I'm just saying, there's drama.
We don't know.
I love OBJ, but he's got to stay on the field, too. He's missed, half the games the last 2 years?
Yep.
I just think we see sports and football through the fantasy football perspective of OBJ's great, Landry's great, but is it going to be great as a team? I got to see a little more. Now, the Rams, someone put on Twitter, when's the last time a team went from being this awful to being a Super Bowl contender? I would argue the Rams after they fired Jeff Fisher. They were horrible his last year and Jared Goff's rookie year. They weren't as bad as the Browns, 0-16. Only a couple teams have done that, the Lions and Browns. But they turned it around, to your point. I just think as long as the Patriots are in the AFC, you're not going to convince me the Cleveland Browns with a coach who's never been a head coach at professional level is suddenly going to unseat the Patriots. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, we are in prove-it mode. I mean, I'm not gobbling up all pieces of Browns stock, but I'll say this, and I said this before to Cease as you were on your way in. For the first time in my lifetime, I'm excited to watch the Cleveland Browns.
That is true. They are must-see TV.
It almost feels like, you know, up is down, down is up, north is south.
I know.
Like the Broncos are trending down and are grabbing at straws and trying to make this thing work. And the Cleveland Browns, their Super Bowl odds changed this morning.
I'll tell you how crazy it is. One of the reasons T.J. Ward signed with the Broncos to play with a contender, but he had never played on a nationally televised game in the NFL.
Wow.
In his career.
Wow.
In 5 years in Cleveland. Never been on a Monday night game. Now they will be on, they will max out.
Yep.
On primetime games.
Yep. Was it five, right?
You're five.
Allotted five. Interesting. I can't wait for football season. I can't. All right, Troy, is there a move that the Broncos didn't make that you wished they would have? I want to hear your answer, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?